This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Happy Wednesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour supersonic soul train line. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Boise to Burlington, Kalamazoo, and Waterloo. We are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Phil is out in New York as president and flamethrower of the New York Knicks. A guy that set fire to the entire organization a little over 3 years ago and leaves it in worse standing than he inherited it, has finally got the heave-ho. So we'll discuss a lot of that over the course of today's show. We've got Rick Kamla from NBA TV this hour to discuss the ramifications of that and who might take that job with the Knicks. Also, next hour, our friend Sekou Smith from NBA.com. We'll also obviously talk Phil with him, but how about a new potential suitor for Chris Paul that nobody had really talked about before? And later on in the show, in the third hour of the program, Shannon Furman, NFL Films producer, working on a very, very cool project for this upcoming season for football fans. So a lot to get to this morning on the show, not to mention Vince Young apparently is very, very bitter.
I don't even have a job, Damian.
And a couple of baseball nuggets, including one broadcaster, former team alumni, trashing that team's training department on air. Good times.
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
As always, you can hit me up on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. You can always connect with us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. And watch the show. The digital broadcast gets better on a daily basis. It's very cool. You can always watch the show, and it's mobile-friendly. Do it on your phone. Go to watchda.com on your PC, laptop, or your phone or tablet. Watchda.com and get the full Monty. We start with the New York Knicks, where the only thing more amazing than Phil finally getting the old heave-ho is the type of destruction he wrought on a franchise in just over 3 years. You know, you really have to take stock of how efficiently Phil worked. He's only been at this, now past tense, for 39 months, little over 3 years, and hired a coach, fired a coach, got into a public war with not one, but two superstars, got nothing back for J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert, signed Derrick Rose, disaster, gave Joakim Noah one of the worst contracts in franchise history. Oh, the hits just keep on coming. And finally, today, the Knicks and Phil part ways. Why now? Just before free agency, look no further than something that Phil thought he was so smart at, driving Carmelo out of town. It's where we begin. it's your cold open.
We've not been able to win with him on the court at this time, and I think the direction with our team is that he is a player that will be better off somewhere else and using his talent somewhere where he can win or chase that championship. Right now, we need players that are really active, can play every single play, defensively and offensively. I don't think I've ever had a player over 25 years of coaching, maybe 30, not coming to an exit meeting. It's not happened to me. I know it happens to other people and other players. You know, his brother and his agent have said, you know, downplayed it. But, you know, still it's a chance for a person to express themselves. And I had a real good relationship with Kristaps over the last 2 years. So it was kind of surprising.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Okay, so that audio courtesy of MSG, that is Phil obviously crushing Carmelo and then talking about openly Kristaps Porzingis missing the exit interview. And those two things never made any sense to me. They make no logical sense. Why don't you hear executives criticize publicly their players? It's because all that does is create negative morale around the team. It gets bitter players on your team. It creates a negative perception for future players of your team, and it drives down their value if you're trying to get rid of them. So why has Phil Jackson been one of the only executives ever to publicly criticize his best players? It's because every other executive since the dawn of time realized it's a no win. There's no positive here. It's only a negative repercussion if we do this. And he chose to do it with not one, but two stars that he had and his two most valuable commodities. Why does that happen? Because Phil Jackson has won so much as a coach that he felt completely untouchable. He has an extraordinary ego. And with all of his success winning titles as a coach and a player, he felt like he always knew the right way to do it. But going out of your way to criticize a player as a coach is a lot different than doing it as an executive. It handcuffs you as an executive because your role as an executive is flexibility. Your role as a coach is motivation. Phil Jackson's role as an executive was not motivation. It was ridiculous to ever think that, unless Phil was going to be on the sidelines. But Phil didn't want that work, and I talked about this week. Phil didn't want to do the work. Phil wanted a cush vanity retirement job. He wanted the one place he would be a conquering hero to come back and fix Camelot and then leave on his white horse, but really not do any of the work involved in having to rebuild an organization. And that's what we had, this intersection with the Knicks, with Phil, where ego trumped everything, didn't understand his role, had no experience, and didn't want to do the work. I'll tell you this, I am shocked James Dolan is deciding to eat some of Phil Jackson's contract. I don't know what they decided on, but whatever that buyout is, he had to eat some of it. And the way James Dolan was talking over the course of the winter was, it's Phil's job. I'm not going to fire him. I'm not going to buy him out. He's got to finish his contract. And Phil had two more years in this contract. Two more. The straw that broke the camel's back was that Phil was adamant, we have to buy out $50 million of Carmelo Anthony. He's got to leave, and he won't waive his no-trade clause. And James Dolan loves stars. He loves stars, and he likes Carmelo. And James Dolan finally saw the rubber hit the road and said, this is untenable. I think Phil Jackson probably gave him an ultimatum. And Phil said, we have to buy out Carmelo or you've got to buy out me. Because the only way I'm sticking around is if we get Carmelo out of this locker room. which again is ridiculous thinking. If you're Phil Jackson, you could have handled this 1,000 better ways. My guess is, as long as you don't openly wage a war of the roses with Carmelo, you may have gotten him to be a little bit more lenient in accepting a trade. But openly sparring and warring and trying to discredit him and crush him on the back page of the tabloids every day was never going to work with Carmelo, because Carmelo held all of the cards. He didn't have to waive his no trade. And fans liked Carmelo more than they liked Phil by the end of this, which is an amazing role reversal, by the way. Because when Phil is hired, everybody loves Phil as a conquering hero, a former player with the Knicks that was part of those championship teams of the 70s, and can't stand Carmelo for being a ball stopper, ISO scorer, apathetic defensively. 3 years later, everything has changed. Fans actually respect Carmelo and hate Phil Jackson. It's amazing. But that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I think the conversation this week was, we have to buy out Carmelo. And James Dolan going, I'm not buying out Carmelo. I'm not paying him to go play for another team. And Phil goes, well, then you have to buy me out. Well, then I'm not going to be around anymore. I quit. Or whatever that was. I think that was the break point this week. And it probably didn't help that Phil was openly talking about trading Porzingis, because James Dolan sees what Porzingis is for business. He's good for business. The fans like Porzingis. The fans want Porzingis. Yeah, there are some critics of Porzingis, but largely you have a guy that is the next guy selling jerseys in your building, and Phil wants to trade him too. It is impossible to put into words succinctly just what a nightmare Phil Jackson created in such a short amount of time. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Look, this was the Isaiah Thomas era for the Knicks, but shorter and without a sexual assault scandal. It was the same thing. Bad contracts, warring parties, coaches not on the same page, stars that can't stand management. It had all the trimmings, all of them, of the Isaiah Thomas, Larry Brown, crazy years of yesteryear. What a cycle of dysfunction in Knicks land. Phil is out, and look, you had to cut out the tumor at some point. I just thought they were going to wait for the next 2 years to let Phil expire. And I don't mean dead. I do mean his contract. But who knows? If he's falling asleep at workouts, maybe he does keel over in the middle of one of these bad boys as well. I don't know. When we come back here on the show, Vince Young is real bitter. But at least he's cooking good turkey necks.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
DA, CBS Sports Radio.
The glitch in the simulation.
How do you do CPR on a turtle?
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later on to the show when we'll answer that question. Trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Help you choose the brakes that are an exact fit for your vehicle. Brands that you trust like Brake Best and Wagner Thermo Quiet. O'Reilly Auto Parts is the brake parts you need to guarantee low prices. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. And check out our web stream, our digital broadcast, our simulcast at watchda.com. It's also mobile friendly. What a tremendous story in an upcoming Sports Illustrated issue by Greg Bishop. Friend of the Da, but also an excellent writer for Sports Illustrated, about where are they now, Vince Young. I can't believe that that game between USC and Texas, maybe the greatest college football game I've ever seen, it certainly is in the top three, might be the greatest college football game ever, was now 11 years ago, really 11 and a half. January 06, one of the great moments in college football history. And I'll never forget watching that game and going, that kid has the it factor, and you need to draft Vince Young. It was so odd that the Houston kid, Houston product, and the Houston Texans at number one in the draft without a franchise QB, because by then David Carr had the snot beat out of him, weren't going to go with Vince Young. They went with Mario Williams. And then the second pick of the draft, the Saints also didn't go with Vince Young. At that time, we didn't know about Drew Brees necessarily. Well, I guess we had some sense, but he wasn't a future Hall of Famer at that point. But okay, they didn't go with Vince Young because they had Drew Brees. But then the third pick to the Titans, they finally went with Vince Young. And I absolutely thought this dude is going to make big-time plays and make some team excellent. He is a winner. He makes teams around him better. He makes plays that others can't. I mean, watching him go down the field in that final drive against one of the great college football teams of all time, that USC team with Pete Carroll that had won those national championships in the Rose Bowl, you couldn't help but think, man, that guy just has it. And he got to the NFL and showed it. He showed it. I mean, he was the offensive rookie of the year in his first season. He went to Pro Bowls. He went to a couple of Pro Bowls. But he couldn't ever keep it together. And in this article with SI, he basically lays the blame at Jeff Fisher. Now, Mraz, you're watching this show about the Los Angeles Rams of last year.
All or nothing.
Which is what we're going to talk about with Shannon Furman from NFL Films, one of their producers later on in the show. This kind of documentation that they have of last season and this documentary series that they're airing. And we had Hard Knocks of the Rams last year, but this is now in-season stuff. And you said after watching the first couple of episodes, your big takeaway was Jeff Fisher is a real jerk.
Well, more of like a jerk as a coach. I think he favors certain players, and that comes across very much like what Vince Young is talking about. And he doesn't care if the cameras are on, and it's evident to me that he favors certain players on his team. There are certain guys that are his guys, and certain guys he pushes harder on. And this, I had that opinion before we saw this Vince Young article, and that's exactly what Vince Young is speaking to.
So there's part of this article, it's a really good read, and you have to really take it all in because it's long and there's a lot of layers to it. I think Vince Young has always been immature. I think, as Norm Chow cited in this article, he was coddled coming out of college. And when he hit adversity in the NFL, he wasn't ready for people to coach him hard. He wasn't ready for Jeff Fisher to lean on him. He wasn't ready for the criticism. He wasn't ready for teammates to resent him for not working as hard. So I think there's absolutely blame at the feet of Vince Young. No doubt about it. And I think Vince, at times in this article, what Bishop does a good job of saying is, at times he shows regret, but at times he just blames everybody else for his failures. But from what Vince Young also describes about Jeff Fisher, it makes Jeff Fisher look like just a disaster of a coach. A guy that absolutely, as you just said, plays favorites, and if you're not his favorite, you are screwed. He is looking to put the screws to you. And that Jeff Fisher, I wouldn't doubt this at all. This is what I believe happened. Fisher didn't really want Vince Young. Vince Young wasn't a traditional pocket passer, which is what Jeff Fisher has always loved. Okay? Steve McNair was not a traditional pocket passer necessarily, but Steve McNair had a lot of traditional quarterback abilities. He could stand in the pocket, take big shots. He was a leader. Guys respected him. He put in the work. That's the type of guy that Fisher's going to love. He was a good old boy, Steve McNair. Vince Young, Jeff Fisher didn't want. Couldn't run an offense with him that he liked. Couldn't ground and pound. Couldn't do the small things. And so when Bud Adams went above everybody at number three and said, as the owner, we're taking Vince Young. I don't care what you guys think. And Fisher said, we can't do that. That started right there, Jeff Fisher's resentment towards Vince Young. And then Vince is telling people, at least in this article, that Jeff Fisher purposefully closed the door on him when he was 2 minutes late for a flight. That Jeff Fisher was telling everybody that Vince Young was suicidal at times. That Jeff Fisher leaked private discussions of them to the media. That basically Jeff Fisher absolutely tried at every turn to push him out of the organization and always favored backup Kerry Collins. And that Kerry Collins would go out, drink beers, go fishing with Jeff Fisher, and he was Fisher's boy. And, you know, I think there's truth on both sides of these stories. I think that Vince Young didn't do everything it took and was coddled and always struck me as kind of he was just immature. Every time he would try to kind of answer or explain what was going on with the organization, what was going on with his career, it always just kind of came off as a 12-year-old throwing a bit of a temper tantrum, like, why are you asking me this? And he never really had the temperament for the next level, but he didn't have a coach as well that helped him get there. He just didn't. And so at his physical prime, when he gets into the league and probably through, he's 27, 28 years old or so, his first 5 years, the guy could make plays, man. I mean, he has more touchdowns than interceptions thrown. He has more wins than losses. He goes to a pair of Pro Bowls and is a rookie of the year. He was not a bum. But we remember him as a bum. We remember him as one of the biggest busts ever. And I think it's, if he didn't have Jeff Fisher his first years in the league, and he had a team or a coach that believed in his abilities and said, we'll make the best out of this, I think he has a totally different career. Now, at some point, those physical gifts were going to erode, and it was going to take Vince Young, his work ethic, his maturity, his stability, to put the next level of work in when he's no longer able to fly around the field. But he was screwed by getting drafted by Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher is the oldest school guy. It's 2017. Jeff Fisher last year was still trying to run the football on first and 10 every single down, every single series. You're like, are you kidding me? You can't win games 16-9 anymore, Jeff. That's not the way the NFL is. But Jeff Fisher wants to do that. Jeff Fisher thinks that's the only way to win. And he was stuck in the past, rooted in old school, stubborn as hell, and had vendettas. You know, and you could never trust that Jeff Fisher was going to do everything and be flexible to try to win. It was going to have to be winning on his own terms. So it's a fascinating story. I think Vince Young needs to look in the mirror and realize that a lot of this has to do with him. Because he finally left, and he just kind of bounced around the league. He had a couple of one-year stints, flamed out in training camps. Now he was in the Canadian Football League. That didn't work. I mean, part of this is on him, no doubt. But it should not be forgotten that Jeff Fisher basically wasted a Maserati. It might have only been a Maserati for 5 years. But Jeff Fisher tried to take a Maserati out on the dirt roads, and it got stuck in the mud. And then he was like, I hate this car. I hate this car. This car sucks. I never wanted this car. Like, well, what are you doing? 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, Rick Kamel is going to join us from NBA TV. Phil and the Knicks part ways. What was the break point? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Are the glitch in the simulation.
An ass whooping's only an ass whooping for so long.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
An ass whooping's only an ass whooping for so long. Remember that as you listen to my incessant promos on the WFAN live stream. It'll only hurt for so long. Welcome back. 38 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. And remember, full episodes of the show podcastable on iTunes. Simply search DA CBS And you can catch anything that you may have missed. Subscribe for free and get full episodes, interviews, just the hours that you want, whatever it is that you want. DA On Demand on iTunes. Phil Jackson and the New York Knicks part ways. I assume they've bought him out. We're waiting for the details on this. He had two more years left in his contract. Joining us here on the show is Rick Kamla from NBA TV to break things down for us. Rick, good morning.
DA, what's going on? It's a whole lot better for us this morning than Phil. The guillotine is like right at the neck, hasn't pierced the skin yet, but it's about to go in. And Phil is about to be, you know, sent off into retirement here. And it's time for Knicks fans to rejoice. No more triangle talk. No more meddling president. Like who sets up a camp to teach the triangle to guys when you don't even have a head coach? I mean, who does that?
It was a mess from day one, and I'm scratching my head at a lot of the decisions that he made, but numero uno, why do you think he wanted to make a public spat or war with both Carmelo and Porzingis? What was his end game there?
Well, it's pettiness, it's ego, it's drama, it's diva stuff, it's soap opera stuff, it's all the bad stuff. I mean, look, to me, and this is my personal speculation on this, okay, the timing of it, why now? And I think, you know, after the draft and all this kind of stuff, maybe because you didn't want to thwart that progress, maybe because Porzingis' name ruthlessly and stupidly being dragged through the mud last week in these insane trade rumors. To me, it was pettiness from Phil. Porzingis obviously blows him up at the exit interview, and that was Porzingis kind of standing in his power as a young leader of this team, saying, I don't like the way this team is being run. I don't like the direction of the team. I don't like how you're treating my teammate Carmelo Anthony, and I'm going to make a public stance on it. And I fully back Porzingis with that. Phil Jackson obviously hurt by that, ego bruised by that, and then pettiness comes out. And I think that was the root of the trade rumors last week. And not to say that, you know, you shouldn't consider getting a huge exorbitant package in return for any asset on any team, but the idea of trading Porzingis is nuts. And I think that was pettiness by Phil Jackson, and I think that was the final straw.
So that's interesting. So you don't mind Kristaps Porzingis not showing up for an exit interview, which everybody does, and he's still very, very young. You don't mind that?
I mean, it's a play by Porzingis. It's a power play by Porzingis. And is it a perfect move by him? Is it the classiest move? Maybe not. But I tell you what, in terms of making a public stance, to me, it's a lot more delicate and a lot better handled than Colin Kaepernick last year taking a knee during the anthem before NFL games.
Well, that's kind of two different things. I mean, one is a guy frustrated with his boss. The other thing is a kind of a social commentary, right?
Well, no, I mean, and I get the distinction there, but what it is a ball player making a public stance on something that he believes in, and whether it's Kaepernick with the huge societal issue that he is taking a knee for, and by the way, now suffering for, or Kristaps Porzingis, who makes a bold, controversial move by skipping the exit interview from Phil Jackson, of all people, but Porzingis got his feelings and intentions out there, and that's the way he chose to do it. And like I said, Colin Kaepernick choosing to do what he did the way he did, whether right or wrong, fair or unfair, I think that's why he's out of a job right now. I believe he is being blackballed by the NFL.
Well, I did not expect an NBA TV guest to start talking Colin Kaepernick, but now I'm curious. I'm intrigued. So you're saying you'd rather see a second-year player skip his exit interview when Carmelo and other guys will make it and everybody else will make it versus Colin Kaepernick kneeling during the national anthem?
Well, I mean, I've said what I need to say on the Colin Kaepernick analogy, and it's a reach of an analogy at that. I'll give you that. But in terms of Porzingis, again, it's not a perfect play. But it's a power play, and maybe he will learn a lesson from this. But the bottom line is, maybe Porzingis wanted Phil Jackson out, and maybe through the whole process of blowing off the exit interview, maybe getting Phil Jackson to make the petty move of dangling his name in trade rumors, maybe all of that nonsense was the final straw for James Dolan to make the move that Porzingis wanted all along. So maybe Porzingis is working out for his national team. Maybe he's on an island somewhere. Maybe he's chuckling and you know, thinking that he got a victory here.
Oh, I'm sure he is. Rick Kamla joins us from NBA TV. The next question is, under James Dolan, it feels like there's a never-ending circus with the Knicks. Do you think other respected general managers would want to work for the Knicks?
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, first of all, the money that Dolan will pay you is probably top five among GMs in all of basketball. If you are able to turn around the Knicks, you are a hero in the mecca of basketball. You'll never pay for another dinner in Manhattan or Brooklyn or the Bronx the rest of your life. So there's all of that. And there's only 30 jobs, DA. You know that. And guy, look, Byron Scott took the Cavaliers head coaching job after LeBron left. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's only 30 jobs. So, yes, big-time guys are going to want that seat. And I believe it's a no-brainer that they should go for David Griffin. If memory serves, Griff has a history with Hornacek going back to their Suns days. I can't remember if it exactly overlaps, but Hornacek's a good dude, good coach. He's finally going to get an opportunity to prove that, albeit with a team that's not ready for prime time. But David Griffin has great relationships with agents, great relationships with players, great relationships with fellow GMs. He gets things done, DA. I did not agree with the Cavs letting him go as their shot caller. And to me, it's a no-brainer for the Knicks to hire him.
Interesting story that also emerged today, and that is that the Houston Rockets have increased their chances, or at least emerged as a serious candidate to land Chris Paul. We've heard the Spurs, now the Rockets. Where do you think ultimately Chris Paul ends up this summer?
Well, I'm not buying the Houston stuff. It just doesn't make sense. You just made the swashbuckling decision. The reason Mike D'Antoni won Coach of the Year was his decision preseason to put the ball in James Harden's hand and make him the point guard. Leads the league in assists, has a million triple-doubles, almost wins MVP. What were they, the third-best team in the NBA in the regular season? You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous. Come on, stop it. I don't think Chris Paul or Blake Griffin are leaving L.A. Why would they? Why would L.A. let them go, D.A.? If you just let Paul say, bye, see ya, have a great life. If you say, bye, see ya, Blake Griffin, go back to OKC or whatever, and you don't get assets in return, you completely screwed your franchise for 5 to 7 years. What you do, to me, is you give Blake the money that you have to give him. You give Paul the money that you have to give him, and then you still have those assets. And then in advance of the 2018 trade deadline, if you want to go in a different direction, blow it up, whatever, you still have those assets you can flip at the deadline for players, future picks, whatever. So to me, it's a no-brainer. The Clippers have to re-sign those guys. And look, I think Ballmer wants to stay relevant, wants to stay ahead of the Lakers in that town, EA. So I don't think he wants to let them go. And I don't really think Blake Griffin and Chris Paul want to leave L.A.
So that's an interesting point, too, to follow up on. I always wonder about the chemistry in L.A. Sometimes it feels like maybe they don't love one another in L.A. with what ends up happening seemingly at the end of every year. Do you feel like Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, if the money is right, do want to opt back in and remain Clippers?
Great question. And your read is the same as mine. And you read the same stuff and talk to a lot of the same people I do. And no, Blake Griffin and Chris Paul aren't boys. They're not dining together. They're not going to movies together. They're not on a banana boat together on vacation. That's just not the relationship they have. And the trust isn't always there between them. And I understand. If I'm Chris Paul, I'm like, how can I trust you? You shrink in every fourth quarter of a big playoff game. And that's my read on it, DA. But I got to believe that there's people in the NBA that are on to the fact that Blake Griffin suffers from Costanza-esque shrinkage in big playoff moments. So, but look, I don't think the relationship is great. I think that those two dudes are in love with L.A., the bright lights, the Hollywood of it all, the fame of it all, and I don't think they want to leave that.
Rick Kamla, NBA TV, joins us here on the show. Are you convinced that LeBron James leaves Cleveland next summer?
If they don't win a championship this year, yes, no doubt about it. So that's why it's all chips in the middle. Maybe you get this buyout from Melo and he comes there. Maybe you know, Wade gets bought out from the Bulls. He comes. Hey, this is just mercenaries, right? Joining a fight, you know, in a third world country right now. That's what's going on here. So if you get a Paul George, you flip Kevin Love into him, you're in full go for it mode this year. And if it doesn't work, if guys get hurt along the way, if you go to the finals and you get beat by Golden State again, I believe then LeBron James, Paul George, who would be a Cav in this scenario, Melo and Wade, who would be a Cav in this scenario, I believe they would all be looking to another city, another home, maybe to come together again. Maybe the parts are different. But, yes, I believe this is a one and done. This is a championship or bust season for the Cavaliers and LeBron James. If he goes another year without a ring, he's going to go chasing that ring somewhere else.
Interesting, but you think then if LeBron does win the championship this year, then it would be very difficult for him to leave then next summer.
Correct, and that's the dicey game for Magic Johnson, you know, the ruler of the Lakers right now, all these Paul George rumors. Well, you are rolling the dice, D.A., if you let Paul George go to Cleveland with LeBron, with Kyrie, with Tristan, with Wade, with Melo. If all that happens and they win the ring, why would they break that up? I mean, guys don't typically run away from a championship scenario. They tend to give a team a hometown discount to keep that together and try to do it again. So that's the dicey game for Magic, and that's why, D.A., I think that Magic Johnson needs to just swallow hard and create a package centered around Brandon Ingram, send him to Indiana for Paul George. And Indiana would be crazy not to take a deal centered around Brandon Ingram. You have a you know, a face of the franchise type of guy for the future, and they don't have leverage. Paul George already said he's gone in the summer of 2018. So to me, that'd be a no-brainer for Indiana to take that deal.
Interesting. Final question. There were some rumors, speculation yesterday that popped that the Celtics would try to land Gordon Hayward free agent-wise and then trade for Paul George. Do you think it's realistic the Celtics could get that 1-2 punch done?
I do, because they have the cap space for Hayward. Now, they would have to, you know, say bye-bye to, you know, the Smarts and the Bradleys, and, you know, eventually, maybe not this year, but eventually, you know, Isaiah Thomas's contract is going to be up next summer. They're going to have some tough decisions to make. The Celtics have all these premium assets, right, these future picks, these great young players, and they need to cash some of them in, D.A., because what they have isn't going to be a super team enough to win a ring, and, of course, that's what it's all about in Boston. And so you just have, you know, like I've been saying all along, I think Cleveland needs to call Boston, offer Kevin Love for Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, and Marcus Smart. It's not the one stud in Paul George, but it's three studs. It's three versatile guys that play both ends of the court, that can make shots, that would be team and chemistry oriented. So that's the way I'd rather see Cleveland go. I think Cleveland needs to get more diverse, more skilled, and deeper. And just bringing in Paul George for Kevin Love doesn't necessarily do that.
Rick Kamla, you see him on NBA TV. You hear him on our powerhouse in Atlanta, 92.9 The Game as well. You follow him on Twitter at NBA TV. Rick, joining us on the show. Rick, this was a lot of fun, man. Appreciate catching up today.
Yeah, DA, call anytime, man. Have a great day.
Rick Kamla joining us here on the show, CBS Sports Radio. Here's where I stand on LeBron. Okay, and I will preface this by saying I was wrong. I will preface this by saying 3 years ago, I thought it was laughable that he would leave Miami, and here's why. Yes, there was the speculation that he could leave the Heat and maybe go back to his hometown Cavs, but at the moment, I said, well, where does he have a better chance at winning a championship? A team that just went to four straight NBA Finals, that had already won two of them, or go jump into a lottery mess that is the Cavaliers, that have an unproven young guy in Kyrie Irving, Anthony Bennett, who looks like a total disaster, and not a lot else to help out LeBron there. Why would he leave something that's already winning? Because winning is the only thing to LeBron. Of course, I was wrong. He left. But what none of us could see was all of the things that he would do once he got to Cleveland to make them better than Miami. No one could have seen the guarantee of getting Andrew Wiggins out and Kevin Love in, although that was rumored. Nobody could see being able to acquire J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert for pennies on the dollar from the Knicks. Nobody knew Tristan Thompson would develop into a legit rebounder. Nobody saw what the rest of that roster could be. And LeBron obviously had the heartstrings tugged on, wanting to go home and maybe finishing that project of his, finishing that fate that he was supposed to deliver that championship to Cleveland. So he does all of that. And I would say 6 months ago, even 4 months ago, if you would have said, D.A., do you think he'll leave again willingly to go somewhere else after going back to Cleveland and being a hero, I would say no. That this is now his story. This is now his path. Having left one championships, having come back and won a championship, having total control over the entire organization, largely picking basically the players that he wants and the coach that he wants, and I thought maybe the GM that he wants. No, he would never leave. And then you have David Griffin being fired, or not extended. LeBron maybe being cool with it, but maybe not being cool with it. LeBron running into the machine that is the Warriors, and Golden State is not going to get worse. They're going to remain a powerhouse. And his contract coming up next summer. And I would say I am now completely flipped. And I think it's longer odds that he stays in Cleveland next summer than it is that he leaves. He could stay, but I think now it's at least 51% that he would leave. When we come back, will anybody good take the Knicks job?
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.